If you've been told to pull your socks up recently, then make sure it's a pair of RCR socks. Visit www.realitycheck.radio/shop.
Welcome back, everybody. You're here on the Up Your Brave show with Natalie Cutler-Welsh on Reality Check Radio. And next, I'll be talking to Rosalind Saunders, all the way over in Australia, on the topic of codependency recovery. Welcome to the show, Rosalind.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I'm so pumped to dive into this topic, which I only know a little bit about. For those of you that may not know Rosalind, Rosalind is a codependency recovery coach and counselor who has firsthand experience dealing with addiction in herself, her children, and her family. Having faced the legacy of her primary family's debilitating addictions, Rosalind was then challenged with the drug and alcohol addictions which emerged in her now adult children. What Rosalind will now tell you is her deep gratitude for this experience, which afforded her the insights and wisdom to address codependency behavior in herself. As a result of this lifetime's experience, Rosalind has developed a thorough, daily, deliberate action plan. And with a program and network of support, she has navigated the tricky road to recovery with the benefit of a lifetime's experience. She is now inspiring greatness in others who are navigating a pathway to recovery themselves. Rosalind has a diploma of counseling. She is also a master certified neuro-linguistic programming practitioner, which is called NLP. And Rosalind is a professional member with the International Institute for Complementary Therapists. Her experience and knowledge of addiction recovery has been further enhanced through the provision of coaching services provided to high needs individuals. And Rosalind, you're also an author. You're a busy lady. Yes. So good to have you on the show and to cover this topic, which I know will resonate with so many because so many people either have an addiction or know someone who does. Before we get into that, can you enlighten my audience with a little bit more about your backstory?
Thank you. Thank you. So I was born in Fielding, down near Palmerston North in New Zealand. Both my parents were addicts. They were very enterprising people, business people, very entrepreneurial. However, their addictions cut their life very short. My father was dead at 47 through alcoholism, and my mother had a stroke at 55 due to prescription medication. So I was marinating, being brought up in this frequency of addiction. What I did then was I then went on and married an alcoholic at 20. Surprise, surprise, I carried on. It was what I knew. I was familiar in that frequency and also in that environment. That then turned into, I had four children, and in the year our marriage was very, very rocky and bad. I had transferred the same set of behaviours in myself from my home life into my married life. It was like a perfect blueprint. I didn't know any different. I don't use or haven't used substances myself. However, I was suffering badly with the conditions of codependency, the addiction of codependency, which I believe kills. And this condition took me to my deathbed in the year 2000. I was taken to the hospital and I was begging to die. I couldn't do it anymore.
There is so much in everything you just said, you know, especially when you talked about the behaviors being transferred. Can you elaborate a little bit more on that? Because for me, when I think codependency, I think people relying on other people. That's where my brain initially goes. Mm-hmm. But what are some of the behaviors that you took from your own growing up family into your marriage family?
Thank you. Some of the behaviors were I stayed in a marriage that wasn't good for me for far too many years. As I said, I didn't use substances. However, my former husband was my drug. Mm. So I used him as my drug. Therefore, I brought up four children in the same environment as I was brought up. I say that addiction is progressive and generational. However, so is recovery. And that culminated in them turning to drugs and alcohol in their early teenage years.
Well, it's been amazing that you've managed to grow from that experience to help your kids through it. And obviously that's enriched your knowledge and now you can turn around and help other people. So what I'm hearing from you, and correct me if I'm wrong, I'm happy to be wrong. What I'm hearing from you is codependency it could be either it's reliance on something or someone other than yourself, like excessive reliance. Would that be accurate?
Absolutely. It can be overdoing things in other people's lives and not doing them in your own. It can be, if you feel it's your job to fix and manage everything, it's all up to you to do it. In close relationships, do you change to please the other person and lose yourself? Are you so busy giving and doing for others that you have nothing left for yourself? And do you fear people not liking or approving of you and then subordinate to them? So we give all of ourselves over to others and there's nothing left for ourselves because we're so bankrupt on the inside ourselves.
Wow, internal bankruptcy. I'm writing that down. Okay, first of all, my initial reaction to that list of things is, okay, if I asked my audience, if we were all together in a big conference hall and I said, raise your hand if any of these apply, I imagine more than 50% of the people would raise their hand.
Absolutely. My thing, Natalie, is that codependency is epidemic out there, but the people don't have the understanding of it. It's not in the DMS-5, the medical, as a condition, and also people... The reason I say that and know that, Natalie, is I was going to counselors, psychologists, psychiatrists, because I didn't use substances, drugs or alcohol. Mm-hmm. I think alcohol is a drug. I actually believe it's our biggest drug problem. However, because I wasn't using them, the people I'd go to for help couldn't understand. And I know for a fact with what I'm doing now, there are thousands and thousands of other women and men out there feeling just like I did. Where do I go? I couldn't seem to get the help. That's why I'm very passionate about what I do now through lived experience and qualifications, bringing them together to support people in the condition of codependency. There is another way to live and it's far better, but we need to go internally and to do our internal work. We all know the external is a reflection of the internal. So instead of putting everything on the outside and wanting to control it, to fix it, to hold it together, we turn internal and we learn to bring the focus back on ourselves. This is an inside out job.
Yeah. Well, what I imagine and what I'm hearing from you is a lot of people slip through the cracks as such. They don't get the help that they truly need because they don't tick those boxes of, you know, drug addiction, alcohol addiction, the more classic ones. Mm-hmm. But in a way, what we're sharing with people today is this is a addiction of sorts, the codependency. So let's just go back to basics, just so that everyone's really clear on codependency. What is it? Because I've given kind of my rough definition, but what is it and how can we recognize if we have it? I know you already mentioned a few things, but I just want to go back to basics to make it super clear.
It's when your self-worth is in other people, places, and things. And unless those people, places, and things are in how you want them by controlling them, then you have no self-worth. It's when our happiness, our joy, our fulfillment in life is in other people, places, and things.
That is so simple. And I mean, it's so simple and yet so easy for that to happen. Is that something that some people are more susceptible than others? Like how is it that some people are codependent and others just seem to get through life without falling into that?
A great question. Thanks. Often it is because if we've grown up in an environment around addiction or around dysfunction, it doesn't have to be substance abuse, dysfunction, severe control, where our needs weren't met as younger people. We then learn to, as a child, we start to adapt to get insecure attachment. So we will start to bend and ship and shape for people to like us. We will people please. We will subordinate our values to others to hold people into our lives. These are all the things that I've done. And while I'm on that, my codependency has taken me to rock bottom in every area of my life, with myself, with my family, in businesses. This stuff is everywhere. The codependency goes with you. So I've needed to be taken back to rock bottom and rebuild myself in every area of my life. And codependency will keep diminishing you until we wake up and start turning that ship around. I don't believe we can do it on our own because we never tell ourselves what we need to know. That addictive brain tells us, gives us the same excuses. And while I'm at it, codependency is very, very normalized out there.
And almost like a badge of honor a little bit, right?
When people absolutely. I'm glad you brought that up. I'm a martyr. I do everything for everybody else. We make that our identity, Natalie, because we haven't got, you know, our own identity inside. So we that's our identity. That's our story. We can become addicted to that story. That's where we get our self-worth.
There is so much in what you just said, and I think I captured it. I tried to write it down. Codependency always keeps diminishing us until you turn the ship around. I'm going to come to the question of how do we turn the ship around
in a moment.
But the other thing that's coming up for me is because I'm a business coach, and I often say I work with people who are ready to shine. In other words, a lot of people who may be stuck in their victim story, or they haven't really processed their life journey, because we all have challenges in different shapes and sizes. And often what I'll do with someone like that is I'll send them to an expert, because that's not my area of expertise. But the other thing I've noticed, having had a health and wellness component to my business for 10 years, and this is a sweeping generalization, but I'm going to make it, is that I find in my life that people who are stuck in victim mode, in other words, naming, shaming, blaming, and complaining. So that might be, oh gosh, I always have to do everything, or I'm always the last one who gets whatever. So it is that sometimes self-imposed martyrdom, badge of honor thing. And rightfully so, you know, some of them have had a really hard time and they've had to chameleonize, as you said, bend, shift, shape, and subordinate in order to survive. So I absolutely get it. And some people turn to, self-soothing tactics, let's call it, of maybe over-exercising, overeating, drugs, additional things. But other people like just play that victim mode, and they get stuck in that story and stuck. And what results, where I'm going with this, is health problems and often, wait for it, cancer.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. You've said it beautifully. And Natalie, the latest neuroscience and neuropsychology, this is scientific information now, that 50% of our stories are not true, but we've embellished them. We've built on them because we get attention. We get sympathy. People feel sorry for us. Oh, you poor thing. Instead of saying, how can you get out of the story? And we become addicted to telling that story for the reasons I've just said. And as you say, people stay stuck. Victimhood is the condition of the 21st century. And the whole planet or the world is built on it. Society supports victimhood. It's a business. It's a multi-billion dollar business. And you're totally right. We know also from people like Dr. Bruce Lipton and Dr. Joe Dispenza that these people who are in this codependency, in this addiction, I call it the mother of all addictions. Mm-hmm. While I'm at that, if we stop the other addiction, let's say eating, drinking, shopping, whatever, and we don't go underneath and look at the codependency that's driving it, all we're going to do is cross-addict. So go back to what this codependency can cause. Like you said, cancer, autoimmune, stroke, heart attack. Stress is the biggest killer on the planet. So we need to go down and we need to look into our lives and start reducing the things. But the problem is with codependency, when we're addicted to it, we don't want to let go of those things, like you're saying, because that's my identity. Who am I without the badge of honor of being a martyr? One of my hardest things to do was slow down. I was always busy, busy, busy. And I was petrified of slowing down, because who am I if I start to slow down and do things?
Who are you if you're not productive and producing?
And go, 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 force, 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 go, 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 hold it all together.
It's so fascinating.
One of my hardest things to do. I was addicted to that, and I didn't know how to live without being like that, because that's how I had developed my life. I was forcing, running to to be able to survive myself and running away from myself.
Well, it's amazing that you can admit that and you can see it now. What was it that helped you see it? Was there a turning point? Or is it rock bottom?
As I said, well, the biggest turning point was in the year 2000, 15th of January, I was taken. My sister took me to hospital here in Brisbane and I was begging to die. The former 3 to 4 weeks before that, I had stopped eating. I couldn't keep water down. I had lost 14 kilograms in 2 weeks.
Wow.
It was shutting me down, my addiction. Now, what I want to point out here, Nat, is people can understand that when they'll look at alcohol or maybe heroin or ice, I think you call it pee over there. They can go, I can see why that happens. My thing is people are not seeing that this happens with codependency as well.
If you're listening, and if you've just tuned in, you're listening to the Up Your Brave show on Reality Check Radio. I'm talking today to Rosalyn Saunders on the topic of codependency recovery. We would love to know what is resonating for you. Has anyone had a little bit of an aha moment, either about yourself around this codependency, which is an addiction, or possibly someone in your life? You can send us a text, 2057 on the text, or email inbox at realitycheck.radio. You listed a lot of things there, Rosalyn, including shopping, you know, so hoarding, right? There's lots of different ways this can show up. I guess I want to move into, unless there's any more ways that, any other ways that people can sense or recognize the signs and the signals, and then I'm going to take you back to that question, which is how do we rebuild? How do we turn the ship around?
Well, I think one way, if someone was resonating with this, Natalie, I think a good thing would be they can go to Amazon and buy my book and they can read about all the ways and the things they can do about it.
Okay, I've got the book in my hand and I'm going to just describe it. So beautiful, by the way, the beautiful, smooth, lovely cover, which I love. Two people on the cover, they're kind of in fetal position, you know, they're hugging their knees, they're looking down. It says, recover from codependency, sustainable steps to heal the addiction that screams the loudest and is the least understood, by Rosalyn Saunders, codependency recovery specialist and coach. And they can get it from Amazon. Do they just type in codependency and it'll pop up?
Yeah, or my name, Rosalyn Saunders, codependency recovery. So that's one thing people could do. They could reach out to me to get a, if they think, well, I think that might be me, or I don't know what to do, because what happens is we want to make the changes, but then we paralyze in fear.
Yeah.
And the number one reason we won't let go of anything, Natalie, is because we're scared of what we have to let go of. Like if I got really honest, it's about getting honest and having someone to be able to work with you with that honesty and baby steps. And the number one reason we won't get really, really honest about something is that we're scared of what we have to let go of. And as I say, and then that festers inside of us because we keep trying, we keep forcing, we keep looking on the outside for things to give us some relief. The number one reason we go into any addiction, all addictions, is we're looking for a relief, emotional relief.
Absolutely. And, you know, the timing is divine. 2024 is really the year of, and especially now as we're recording this in May, it is an ideal time for people to release. And my audience has heard me talk about this a lot, but I'm going to reiterate. It is time to release things, people, habits, obligations, duties, things that you're doing, identities, you know, in your life that aren't serving you. And so often I would, you know, some advice that I'd say is, instead of surrendering to your story, maybe it's time to surrender your story.
That's absolutely right. And start writing a new story. But when we're fully in addiction of codependency, we don't want to let go of our story. That's all we've got to hang on to. That's our life. That's our identity. So it's about letting go of that story and creating a new identity. And I'd just like to mention in here, Natalie, is I work with a lot of parents who've got adult children like I've had in addiction, because we as parents become codependent to our children and the enabling, and which doesn't often help them. So that's a very big area that I think parents are suffering out there with. So if you've got children, adult children, and in forms of addiction, or if you feel you know, get some support for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, you're reminding me of, I have this friend, we've known each other for 10 years or so, and she came to one of my workshops, and often it's only 10 or 12 of us. And I say, let's do around the room, you know, who's in the room, just do a brief introduction. Mm-hmm. And we all went around the room and she did her introduction. And I pulled her over later on when we went for, you know, a snack in the other room. And I said, that is the first time I've heard you introduce yourself where you don't talk about your cancer journey.
Yes.
You know, because it had become such her, you know, her story, her identity. It was like who she was. And then she got people, you know, sending her love and best wishes and things. And I was like, I think it's time to just introduce yourself differently. So I guess I'm putting a challenge out there. Anyone who has been clinging to their story, whether it's, you know, your addiction story or your victim story, you know, with all due respect.
Yes.
I would say, I just want to invite you. Maybe it's time to surrender your story, you know, release it. Of course it happened. Of course it shaped who you were, but it's time to step into this new you. And as Rosalind's saying, to rewrite your story. And so I'm saying, when you introduce yourself, you know, at a cocktail party or a networking event or whatever, maybe reintroduce yourself without that label. Just let it go and step into who you are now. That's my invitation.
Absolutely right. And part of my process with my clients is when they go out for coffee is to not talk about that. Go out, be able to go out without that story and that identity.
All right. We're on the same page. I love it so mm-hmm. much. I love to give my audience some specific practical tips, you know, things that they can do. So I hear what you're saying. They can get your book and they can get in touch. But what are some practical things that they can do? Let's say if they're the one that realizes, oh my gosh, I'm listening to this interview and I think I'm codependent. Mm-hmm. What is something that they can do to turn the ship around?
So educate yourself on the topic, be courageous enough to be honest, even if it's only to yourself, and get support. No one in the history of addiction in the whole world has ever got through it without support. And also find someone that's got themselves out of the trenches from which you're in, not someone that's particularly, with all due respect to people that go to university and learn this stuff, someone that's actually clawed their way out of the trenches and someone that's walking the talk, not just talking the talk. So that's number one. You can reach out to me if you'd like to. I do a 20-minute discovery. You can tell me what's going on. I can make some suggestions. That first, then the biggest thing is getting honest and understanding. You're talking about story and identity. Ask yourself, what is the payoff for me for staying in this story? Do I get sympathy from people? Do people feel sorry for me? Does it give me a reason that I can control people?
And that's a bold question. For some people, that will be quite a realization.
It will. People are doing this, like all addictions, unconsciously. It's about to bring it to conscious awareness and then with manageable steps how to reformulate your life, living in a healthier way.
And a lot of people, they wouldn't, you know, especially if they've come from a background, like their original nuclear family that they were in as such,
yes,
whatever their family environment was, a lot of people wouldn't really know how to do that because they've only seen maybe poor examples of that. How can
Absolutely.
They?
Absolutely. That's their knowing. And that's even in their uncomfortableness, they're comfortable in that because they know no different. That's totally understandable. That's why you need someone who's outside of that. I strongly suggest that you get someone that's outside of your family and outside of your friend circle. Like you said about your other person just before, those people have heard the stories, they've watched it for years. So change your story, start changing yourself, get someone outside of your environment that you can get support from. And someone that will hold you, someone that cares, and someone that will hold you and help you to be accountable and help you hold your hand with the baby steps as you start to make the changes inside out yourself.
Because I imagine when they start making changes, they get a little bit of pushback from the people that know them.
Absolutely. Not everybody's going to like your changes. Let's say they start putting in a couple of boundaries, especially when it's adult children who are using substances and things. People don't like it. They like it how you were because they've had a role to play in that as well. So it's to have someone to hold you, someone to hold your hand when you're low, someone to squeeze you when you need it, someone to call you on your BS. and someone to help you be accountable and someone there to champion you on in this wonderful journey of recovering from codependency. It's like your own internal gold medal.
Absolutely. I'm looking at your book now, and there's so many interesting chapter titles, but one that's jumped out to me is chapter 5, Mental Aspects of Codependency, Getting Beyond the Codependent Crazies.
Yes.
What are the codependent crazies?
Thank you. It's when we're suffering from codependency and we think we're the one that's going crazy. And actually, a lot of people will tell us, you're crazy. And I want people to say, you're not crazy. You have a condition called codependency, and it can be changed and it can be healed. That's what I want to say, because people don't know where to go. And I know that because I was going everywhere. I was running around like a chook with my head cut off, going to all these. There's not many therapies, modalities out there I haven't tried. It wasn't getting down to the codependency underneath. And also another thing I'd like to mention, Natalie, is you cannot intellectualize yourself out of an emotional problem. Right. Codependency is emotional. You cannot intellectualize yourself. People think, I'm smart enough, I should be able to do this. It doesn't work. Three years ago, I was coaching three professors, all around the world, fabulous people. Two of them were men and one was 75. He'd come for a talk from mine. And he said, one was 75 and more degrees than a thermometer. Yet their emotional and personal lives were killing them and creating physical health. And we know, as I said, I think Dr. Bruce Lipton, when we're under stress, when we're not happy, when we're out there always running around living our lives for other people, it downregulates the genes of stress, and that downregulates the genes. It changes our genetic structure to form disease.
Absolutely. It sounds, because it's that cortisol, it's the fight or flight and all that.
Yeah, we're living in it all the time. We're in that, and the body cannot sustain that.
Not at all. I'd love to ask you a question around if there's a specific example in your book. I know you've got Maria's story, Carrie's story, yes. Leanne's story, Mark's story, codependency and food. Can you just choose one story like that and share that with us today so we can get a little bit more of an idea of how someone came through and came out the other side?
Okay, thank you. Well, I'd like to pick Maria's story.
Yeah.
So she came to me. She's a highly, highly, highly intelligent woman. She's actually a Mensa, so that's the top 3% of intellects on the planet. She'd been brought up in a dysregulated family. Her father was a poly addict, and her mother was a driven woman, so she carried on these processes.
What's a poly addict?
Well, many addictions.
Got you.
So he was an alcoholic, and cancer actually killed him as well, like my father, and smoker, et cetera. So Maria was brought up in this environment. She was one of five, a highly successful family, but all very driven. So she came to me when her second marriage had broken down. So this highly educated woman that had worked in high corporate paying jobs was left with nothing, reduced to nothing. She had no car, no money. She couldn't even buy the groceries because she'd used her codependency and it had reduced her to nothing. So she came to me and we started working, and just to carry, she did the work. She was very diligent. She had to. Like me, she would lose her life. She couldn't keep weight on. She was very, very thin. It's a wonderful story in that book about Maria. And I'm very grateful she let me share it because it relates to so many things. Today, Maria has created a business, another new business. She's a consultant. She's written a book. She's earning $150,000 to $200,000. She has rebuilt herself from the inside out. But she was such a diligent student. Everything I suggested, we broke it down and she took heed of it. And she is booming.
That's what we do want to hear. We want to hear the positive stories to know what is possible, because I imagine when people are stuck in that cycle, or I think at the start of this interview, you talked about patterns and frequency,
yes.
They just keep doing what they know.
That's right.
But to know that there is a better path and how to get there is so important. Something that just caught my eye, I think it's the last chapter of your book, the financial aspects of codependency.
Absolutely.
Can
we can take our
that?
Why I say that is that I I was reduced. I lost everything 8 years, 9 years ago. And that was because I'd heavily invested, handed over too much of my power, of my money in a big project, and I lost everything. So you definitely can in financial. And there's a wonderful story of Peter, one of the professors I'd coached, where he said he had a lot of money and he was on all these boards. And anyway, and one day, a little story here, I opened up my emails. It was a Friday morning. It was further on since I'd coached Peter for 6 months. And he said, "You're the best no lady I know about saying no to what isn't serving us." And he said, "I went to a board meeting today, and every year I go and I just go, yes, yes, yes." Mm. He said, "Today I said no, and I've saved myself between $250,000 and $500,000 because he had the courage to say no.
That is so important. It's such a skill, especially for the people that fall into that people-pleasing category.
Absolutely. The disease to please.
The disease to please. Exactly. Mm. Can you explain that a little bit more so everyone knows what we mean?
Well, it means you say yes to everything. How do I know this stuff, Nat? Because I was the queen of it. I was full-blown. I would go, people would ask me places I didn't even want to go that maybe even cost $150, but I'd go so they'd still like me or didn't leave me.
Yeah, exactly. And a lot of people do that. They'll say yes because they don't want to let other people down or because no one else is doing it. I remember my sister was going to a meeting at school. Yes. And she said, "Oh, Nat, you're so good with saying, you know, speaking the truth and saying what you want. I know they're going to ask me to be, you know, the treasurer for the rowing team or whatever.
Yeah.
Like, what should I say?" I said, "All you say is, that's a no from me."
Perfect. But do you know, Nat?
Well, no, I said to say, thank you for the invitation.
Yes,
and then confidently say, "That's a no from me."
Beautiful. Do you know how hard it is? And that's what I mean. We start reducing our commitment, starting having the courage to say no to things. And another thing, I'd just like to go back to Maria's story, Natalie, which is, I've said in the book as well, because Maria did this work on herself, mm-hmm. her then 12-year-old child, who's now 18, has actually... He understands all this stuff. He takes responsibility for things. He says no to things when he needs to. So when we do this work, it ripples on down to our children. And when I get parents that come to me and their children, I say, do this work on yourself, and it will ripple down to the children. We're the demonstration. We start living differently and they do. So that kid at 18 knows more about personal responsibility, saying no to things, than most people I know that are 30, 40, 50, 60, because his mother has made the changes in her life. Very important.
And I think for a lot of people, that would be quite new to them to, you know, invest in themselves, personal development, training, therapy, whatever, where they might be used to pouring money into their poor child who has the whatever's going on addiction.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So we're kind of turning the tables a little bit.
Well, the other thing is, let me tell you, if you're codependent, which I was, you're spending way more money on your codependency. So mm-hmm. having someone to help you pull back on that and then put the money into getting someone to support you. Mm-hmm. I tell my clients that my intention is, and I give them an exercise to so that they have the evidence themselves that the coaching is working. And I tell them that I want you to, where the coaching is actually costing you less than what you were spending on your codependency.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about going shopping, buying things. Then, you know, for 5 minutes or a few hours, it gives you a high, then you go into the low.
Mm-hmm.
It definitely saves people money because they start to get aligned with what's right for them and they stop saying no to things. People are spending so much money on their codependency, but they don't realize it.
Well, hopefully from today they will. What I'd love to invite our audience to do, if this is resonating with you, please go ahead and share it. You know, share it with somebody in your life. I don't think they'll be offended, hopefully. If you want to send it to someone, you can just grab the link. You can get it from the replay page if you're listening live, or you can even post it if you're so bold on your Facebook page. That would be amazing. What we're trying to do is just spread the word so more people realize this is a thing. This is an actual thing, and it's very common.
It's definitely a thing. And as I said, it's screaming out there the least and the least understood. So my thing is to unearth it. As I said, it took me to my deathbed, and I know there's thousands, if not millions, of people out there, but and not having the courage. So you need someone to help you have the courage to open up and start making small changes as you build the muscle.
Mm. Small changes for a big shift to turn yes. the ship around. I'd love to ask you these three questions, Rosalind, that I ask all my guests. Starting off with, what would you do if you were to truly up your brave in 2024?
My intention is to keep stepping out with this very, very important message, and I'll do whatever. I'll go on talk shows. I'll to get my voice out there.
Well, I know you're taking
those that are suffering, because I know that they are, and they can't quite put their thumb on what's wrong with me until they get to the doctor's office and they say, you've got cancer or something. Don't wait.
Yeah. Thank you. Well, thank you for upping your brave and sharing your own personal story. And then, of course, doing all the qualifications and all the work to be able to empower others. I'm going to ask you in a minute how people can get in touch with you, but what is coming up for you in the next, let's say, you know, 2 or 3 months, and how can people connect with you online?
Thank you. So I've just produced a video series, which people can buy off my website. And it's 14 videos, little videos, about 5 to 6 minutes each, on the nuts and bolts of codependency. So if people are thinking, where do I start? What do I do? Feeling confused. Don't shut down. Keep the door open and get knowledge. So people can buy that off my website. And on June the 15th, I'm coming to New Zealand and running a workshop, Break Free from Burnout and Stress, with 2 other very powerful facilitators to help people in this area. So I'd love, if anybody's in that area, to come along to that.
And where is that?
That's in Tauranga on June the 15th.
Amazing. What we'll do is, as always, I'll put the links up on the replay page. So if someone is in or can get to Tauranga to come along to that event, you'll get to hear Rosalind speak, meet her in person, maybe buy her book, get a selfie.
I'd love it. I'm very, very passionate, because I see it out there, the suffering with this silent kind of epidemic.
Well, I think that you're doing some great work. And then obviously, if people can't get to that event, they can always get your video series. What is your website called?
RosalynSaunders.com.au. That's RosalynSaunders.com.au. And remember, if people are not thinking, if it confuses them, am I, aren't I, what? I do a 20-minute, people are happy. Reach out to me and we can have a chat.
Lovely. Also, where are you on the social media? Where can they follow you online?
Oh, right. So I've got the Codependency Coach on Facebook, my own name. You can come through my personal page. I post on there as well. I do lives, a couple of lives a week, just on little tips. I have another group called Power of No, saying no to what isn't serving you.
Yes, I love that.
And then I'm on Instagram. That's all I'm on, because that's all I can manage.
Well, you've done very well. That's right. No is the new yes. You guys can get in touch with Rosalind on the socials or her website. And if you can't remember any of that, just send us a text, 2057, and say, Rosalind's contact details, please, and we'll send them to you. That's no problem. Rosalind, is there anything else you would love to share with our audience before we go?
I'd just like to leave you that codependency kills, and if it doesn't kill you, meaning cancer, or it kills our every day, we're not in our life. And I'd like to say there is another way to live, and I'm a living testament to that, and I'm so, so grateful. I love my life.
You certainly are a testament to that. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom, insight, and inspiration with us today, Rosalind.
Thank you very much for having me.
And thank you, everybody, for listening.
Thank you for tuning in to RCR, Reality Check Radio. If you like what you're listening to, or dislike what you're listening to, either way, we want to hear from you. Get in touch with us now. You can text us with your message to 2057. That's 2057. Or email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio. We would love to hear from you, so connect with us today.